you know, I think that's a testament to just the charter model in general, that we have that ability to flex and identify student needs and make changes as quickly as we can make them without having to worry too much about district oversight or just some of that bureaucracy pieces, knowing that as long as we are following FAPE, we're following IDEA, that... That's what really should be driving these decisions, is that student need piece.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brighter Together podcast. My name is Janet Courtney, and my special guest today is Nate Moore. Nate is a special education coordinator and is a part of the leadership team at Laura Jeffrey Academy, and that's in St. Paul, Minnesota. Nate, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us a little bit, Nate, about your role and about... Laura Jeffrey's Academy.
Yeah. I have been there now. This just finished up my third year at Laura Jeffrey at LJA. And I helped oversee the special education programming there. So I was the district rep in all of the special ed meetings, handled a lot of the due process kind of meetings, setting those things up. Due process clerking, and then also kind of helping to facilitate training for all of our support staff, licensed teachers in the building as well. And then additionally serving on our leadership team, and that's just, you know, the day-to-day functions of how of helping the school run. Laura Jeffrey has a very unique model in that we are educator-led, so we don't have a traditional principal or administrator, executive director, anything like that. That was a decision made, I believe, back in 2017 to transition to that model. And really, that really is something that we strongly believe in. Obviously, we've been doing it now for a number of years.
Before the pandemic.
Just, you know, we like it that it allows us to, as leadership team members, the students see us directly interacting with them on a day-to-day fashion. It cuts down on a layer of kind of communication barrier so that we're just more accessible to families and other partners in our community.
So it didn't start out that way?
No.
So how long has Laura Jeffrey Academy been chartered or operating, I guess?
Yep. We have been operating since 2010. We just finished up our 15th years as a school.
Congratulations. Awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. You know, no easy feat stay operational as a charter school. You know, it's a testament to a number of educators in the building that have really rolled up their sleeves, dug in and done the work, done a lot of learning. Just, you know, both within just school systems and just making connections with our community as well.
So how did that come about? How did you decide to go with a leadership team model? Because it's not traditional. I mean, that's, your guys are outside the box for sure.
Yeah. You know, there had been an executive director that was there. And it just felt like between the teaching staff at the time and the kind of leadership team, there was kind of a recognition that that current model wasn't serving the students and wasn't serving the school. And so they agreed to kind of transition into this educator-led model. And, you know, it's something that every year we go back to the drawing board and reflect on and try to, you know, be intentional about our practices, making sure that this feels like it's serving our staff as well as our scholars. And knowing that we all have so much still to learn about this process, and that we'll never be done on that learning journey. And if nothing else, that's something that we like to model for our students, that we are all lifelong learners, that no one knows it all, and that sometimes it looks a little messy, and that if we're making mistakes, we got to acknowledge those and try to do better.
Yeah, you don't learn from everything going smoothly, do you, ever? I'll tell you, I never considered myself an entrepreneur, but when you start your own business, you're an entrepreneur. It doesn't matter if you've been doing that same thing for a long time or not. And you take the bumps, and the only way that you learn and get better at something is not when things are easy. It's when something goes wrong. You know, it's like, okay, how do we respond to that? We plan better. We try to make sure that things as you get bigger and as you do things that you do things well, and you certainly learn from your mistakes, but there's always going to be a new challenge. At least there should be, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Every year, always a new challenge, always something for us to kind of grow and build on.
So what would you say makes Laura Jeffrey Academy different other than your leadership model? Like if you're attracting, there's a listener in the Minnesota area, in the Minneapolis, St. Paul area, what would you say it is an attraction to your school versus going somewhere else?
Yeah, there are a number of things. One is that we start middle school in our building at fifth grade. And that's, again, kind of bucking with a lot of trends. We really see it as an opportunity to really develop and grow student leaders within our building. And then just with kind of the research that we've looked into as a building, how that supports our STEM focus and really getting scholars to kind of engage in sort of that engineering design process, really thinking through some of the metacognition related to it about what it means to be an engineer and what it means to be a scientist, and not just that it's, you know, dealing with the programming or coding, but that it's more of a mindset. And so developing that mindset shift of we're going to look at a problem, really analyze it, work to think through possible solutions, try out those solutions, see what works, see what didn't work, and what can be kind of improved upon. And just knowing that the earlier we can kind of start capturing those brains and working on some of that thinking, that goes a long way towards creating really, really strong scientists and scholars moving forward. They end up becoming student leaders in their high schools. And really being great self-advocates for their own learning needs. So the fifth grade portion especially is something that I think stands out for us.
Right. And so your school is specifically fifth grade through eighth grade? Is it eighth grade? So middle school, basically, right?
Yep,
and early middle school. Mm-hmm. So you're probably going to attract students that have that kind of bent, right? That are interested in the engineering. And is that where the specialty lies specifically?
That's a big piece of it. As well as we have a strong environmental learning component as well. Partly that's just something as a staff we all very strongly believe in. It's also something that our authorizer Osprey Wilds does require of us as for our charter.
Explain to people a little bit about that, because we have listeners that don't know what that is. So,
of course, yeah. So there's in Minnesota, there are very strong limitations on who can authorize a charter school, which kind of is sort of it's kind of the state handing over some of the regulatory authority to nonprofits, districts, and then universities are the three entities that are allowed to oversee charter schools in Minnesota. So Osprey Wilds is a nonprofit based out of Sandstone, Minnesota, and they have their own environmental learning center, which is just separate from what their authorizing arm does. So they oversee a number of different charter schools with all different kinds of focuses, but wanting to really make sure that they're getting environmental learning and outdoor learning opportunities for all of the students that they oversee.
Right. And that gives them an opportunity to do something a little bit different than other people, for sure.
Yeah. Our kids, we've had a lot of strong partnerships with like Friends of the Boundary Waters and doing a lot of kind of day canoe tripping, just even at like local lakes, just really understanding how the environment impacts kind of all facets of our daily lives.
So how do parents or how do students find your charter? How do they, is it just marketing and advertisement, word of mouth? I mean, I'm sure those are part of it, but where does their focus lie on attracting those students?
Yeah, a lot of marketing, a lot of word of mouth. That's been a big emphasis, especially post-pandemic, of just trying to get students back into physical buildings, even though we're a few years removed from online learning here.
But it changed everything, didn't it?
It really did. So it's a lot of kind of social media advertising, charter school fairs as well, that we participate in. And then kind of another sort of little bit of grassroots sort of component is just our special ed department. It's a very magical department. I'm very lucky to work with a very talented team of educators who just really do a great job of cultivating community. And it seems like a lot of word has spread just through other outside support agencies, therapists, occupational therapists, SLPs.
Right up my alley.
Yep. who service some of our scholars outside of school, hear about the amazing work we're doing. And so that's been another sort of in the last 3 years kind of boon, just that a lot of families with a number of different neurodiversities and other disabilities hearing about the work we're doing at Laura Jeffrey and making that as an intentional choice. And so it's something that we do a lot of tours and shadow days around just to make sure that scholars and families know what we are as a school building. And that's something that we really emphasize, is that we don't want scholars just kind of showing up because they've heard about us. We want to make sure that it actually feels like the right fit for them as well. So those tours and shadow days are something that we strongly believe in, knowing that you can't really get a feel for the school culture and whether or not it's going to be a fit for your scholar and your family without being in the building with our other scholars.
So are you doing mostly inclusion then, more of an inclusive model?
Yeah, that's primarily been our focus, has been doing inclusion. This year, however, we finally had a student population that was big enough that we started providing some more setting three services and more self-contained services. Mm-hmm. And that was really felt, that was a big paradigm shift for us. That was something that we had traditionally not done. Mm-hmm. And for those students who have needed those services, it's been nice to be able to build a bit of community with them, mm-hmm. where instead it was just kind of a lot of individualized pullout sessions, which felt very isolating. And, you know, in those middle school years, they're yearning for connection and needing that.
Yeah, they definitely are. Yeah, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter where you're at, the developmental, they're middle schoolers. They need that. They're trying to figure out who they are, right? Yeah. It's such a fun, hard age, really.
It is. Really. It really, really is. And so that building that program is pretty much, we got to the end of a quarter and the team kind of came together and we were like, we are spread way too thin trying to do all of these pullout services in minutes. We quick put together a schedule, kind of found the space where we could make a classroom. It's in our old makerspace. And it was an incredible experience for all of us for that second half of the year. So many of some of the behavior pieces with some of those scholars just melted away because the learning was now finally at their level, at their pacing. Right. They didn't feel like they needed to keep up both academically and socially. So there was a lot less of sort of that fronting kind of stuff happening. And just the engagement in the learning felt so good in that space. And I'm so glad that we decided to kind of take that leap. It was a bit of a leap of faith. We weren't quite sure what it was gonna look like, how it was going to work, kind of what it meant as far as how they were going to access specialists and specialties. And that team was amazing at flexing and kind of going along with the bumps and, you know, working through some of the communication pieces that went with that. But, that was something that, you know, we had no intentions of doing when we started the school year, but based off of just who showed up at our school and their needs, we rolled with it. And like I said, it's, it took the whole team and they were just fabulous in rolling.
And this happened last year. This was last year.
Yeah, this was basically right after winter break. We also we do a J term, so we kind of got to the end of J term, and we were just looking at our service grids and realized that we needed to do something different, just to make sure that those scholars were getting the support. And we could also make sure that the students who didn't need all of that pull out services, that their push-in services were getting met as well.
So explain to me what a J term is. That's one I'm not familiar with. You
Yeah.
know, I'll tell you one real quick. The part of the reason, not only just my own knowledge, but we as educators just love our terms, love our
We
acronyms.
love
And
our
I want to
acronyms and
make
they were
sure that
charming.
this goes nationwide. I want to make sure who's listening can understand what we're talking about, right? So, yeah.
No, it's it kind of like you would experience at the collegiate level. We offer a series of electives. Some of them are student driven, so kind of beginning of quarter two, we start kind of polling staff and students, thinking about what classes do you all want to take for J term. So the afternoon are those electives, and it's such a wide variety. They've built skateboards, they've done outdoor
Is it a
wilderness
short term
survival.
in between
Yep, it's
semesters or
just the month of January,
Oh,
just for that
gotcha. Okay.
4 week
Well, then
period.
J January. Got it.
Yep.
Okay.
And then the morning they still have kind of access to sort of the core academics, but it's a slightly different lens. So they all engage in a book study. So they have their choice of books, kind of, and that allows us to also then mix grade levels even further.
Oh,
So we'll
yeah.
have fifth and eighth graders, depending on kind of reading levels, being able to read and analyze the same book together. And then math is a financial literacy focus. So
Oh,
really
nice.
developing those kind of life skills. So eighth graders and seventh graders work through kind of a budget simulation, finding a job, figuring out how much rent is, are they going to buy a car, are they going to
Wow,
take
good
public
for them.
transportation?
Yeah, so important. Life skills. Wow, those are so. I don't care what your child, what level your child is, they all need it. They all need, I, it, yeah. Yeah. Love that. Love that so much because, man, it's like I didn't have that myself. So when I had my own children, budgeting and financing and all of that was so important. It's like, don't make the mistakes. You never want the kid your kids to make the same mistakes you made. I was like, oh. So I love it when schools talk, math and algebra and all those math, it's all of it's really, really important. But those fundamental, I work, I get paid. What do I do with my money so that I have a roof over my head, clothes on my body, and food that I can eat? Like they're just so critical. It's a critical skill for sure. Yeah.
It's the easiest time to answer the math question of when am I ever going to use this? It's like literally every
Yeah.
day of your life.
Every day of your life. Yeah, for sure. For sure. That's fantastic. Well, I love that. I took us off a little bit, but you were talking about J term and then yeah.
So that's we went down kind of at the end of our J term, which always culminates in just a really wonderful field trip. We go to one of the local ski hills and have
Oh, fun.
just a winter fun day of inner tubing. We were lucky enough to have the coverage that the special ed team was able to stay back, have a day to kind of just get caught up first on our due process and our paperwork, which was that in and of itself was a blessing. But then additionally, kind of like I said, go through our schedules and kind of realize we had enough scholars that we could formulate a self-contained classroom setting. And so kind of managed to figure out what that schedule would look like in about a day. Over the weekend, move some furniture around. Our scholars are very used to being tapped into to ha kind of help figure out what a space, what their learning spaces are going to look like. So it wasn't too much for them to show up on Monday and say, "Hey, what decorations do you all want in here? What do you want the space to look like? This is yours now." So they really, there's a little bit of trepidation at first, a little
A
bit,
change. Nobody likes change,
change
right?
because
Yeah, change.
but I would say, after about 2 weeks, they really settled in, and it was a really beautiful community. And like I said, it's spanned all of our grade levels, fifth through eighth. And it gave especially our eighth graders opportunities to be leaders in the classroom space in ways that they otherwise probably wouldn't have been able to, just based off of some of their academic needs. So that was really, really nice to see. And there's an eighth grader in particular that I worked very closely with, and it was just nice to see her kind of get that opportunity to show off all the skills that she's learned, in a way that wouldn't have shown up in a traditional classroom setting, in the same way.
Well, and I think I want to make sure that our listeners are getting this. Okay, you guys changed how you were teaching, where the kids were going in the middle of the year because you saw a need in your students. I'm impressed. I have to say, I've been in education for a long time. I've worked with lots of different schools in all over the United States, and that to me is it's touching to me. It makes me teary because you recognized and you did what you needed to do to serve those kids. And that, Lighthouse and my servant, me as a servant, as a therapist, all of us, we have servant hearts and we want what's best for our kids. And when you, as a team, take that up and don't go, well, we know there's a problem, but we'll deal with it over the summer when we have time to think about it. No, you really recognized it. And I just kudos to you and to your team for taking that on in the middle of the year because it was what was best for your kids. So congratulations to you and your team.
Thanks. I think that's a testament to just the charter model in general, that we have that ability to flex, and identify student needs and make changes as quickly as we can make them, without having to worry too much about district oversight, or just some of that bureaucracy pieces, knowing that as long as we are following FAPE, we're following IDEA, that's what really should be driving these decisions, is that student need piece. And so that I think is what really does make Laura Jeffrey so special, is that we are able to identify student needs regardless of some of the IEP status, just to make sure that the classrooms feel inclusive and welcoming. Students have a strong sense of self and their own identity, and so that they feel confident leaving us going into high school about who they are, what their needs are. And that they can make sure that they access those things going into high school.
Well, that's fantastic. So has it is there any thoughts of expansion beyond eighth grade? I'm just curious. The only reason I'm asking is because wow, you guys are doing such a great job with the fifth to the eighth graders. What's the thoughts about 9 through 12?
It's that always comes up, and I would say, I don't know that the leadership team is quite ready to take that on. The other piece, that I would say is the biggest barrier right now, would be space. Just we would need a different building, and that is would just be a really, really heavy lift for us. But it's definitely something that we always kick around. We always kind of discuss, just do we want to go up? And I would say right now the timing just doesn't quite feel right for us to really make that leap. But where the team is very dynamic and really, if something were to come along that felt like it really was the right opportunity, I think they would jump at it. Right now, not quite there yet, but that's also something that, just with expansion, there are a lot of layers to that, and there need to be a lot of intentionality, just on the authorizing side of things, the state oversight piece as well.
That's okay. That's okay. I love what you're doing with your fifth to eighth graders. I love it. It's one of those things. It's a question that you just, I know you get asked, and I know that somebody's listening. It's like, I wonder why they're not doing that. And you answered it beautifully. So I have one other question. I don't always ask all of my podcast guests. Initially, I did. And sometimes it's a good question, and sometimes it's like, we already really kind of touched on that, so I don't. But I'm going to ask you this question because it's a great question and it's a thought-provoking question, but you cannot say money because every school would like to have an unlimited budget, and I know that. So the question, but the question is, if you could miraculously, within the sphere of what you do, if you could fix one problem that you have, that your school has, that something that's in your sphere, not like fixing homelessness or fixing that every kid, has enough food or whatever, but in your sphere, what would it be if you could fix one thing? What would you want to fix?
Boy, there's a
See, I
lot of
told you it
things
was
there. Yeah, no,
thought-provoking.
it is.
You'd think I'd done this before.
No, right? I would say there never ever feels like there are enough hours in the day to get to all of the things that we need to get to, whether it's a student, whether it's paperwork, and So I would say oftentimes it feels like the paperwork side of things gets pushed to the side because we've got a real human in front of us that has a need. And so we go to that first. And then, you know, it's a lot of late nights and evenings and time away from our own families to tend to the other side of our jobs, which is that paperwork side that, you know, we also don't have a ton of flexibility on. Other than, like I said, you know, it doesn't have to happen during the school day necessarily, but it has to happen at a certain point. And so, finding ways to carve out more time where that paperwork is getting done while also meeting some of those student needs. You know, if I had that magic wand.
If you had that, if you had that miraculous solution, right? Well, I'll tell you, this has been, Nate, a fabulous conversation. You got me teary-eyed. So I appreciate what you guys are doing. Where do people go if they want to learn a little bit more about Nate Moore and about Laura Jeffrey Academy?
Yeah. Our website is www.laurajeffreyacademy.com. And Jeffrey is spelled a little wonky. It's J-E-F-F-R-E-Y. So laurajeffreyacademy.org. All of our admission, enrollment information can be found there. More information about the rest of our leadership team is also on our website there. Hope all of our scholars are having a great summer, recharging and getting ready for another great year of learning.
Awesome. All right. Well, it's just so people know, this was recorded on June 25th. Summer will probably be mostly over by the time people hear this, but you have a wonderful summer as well. And thank you so much for coming on the Brighter Together podcast, because we really are brighter together.
Thanks so much for having me.